Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. For 7 years, Rebecca Brenner couldn't bring herself to open a single box. Inside were her late mother's poems, journals, and short stories left behind after her mother's death from opioid addiction. It wasn't until Brenner became a mother herself that she finally opened the lid. What followed was a decade of writing in response, poem by poem, to a woman she'd lost and was only beginning to understand. The result is her debut memoir in verse, Paper House, published by Wayfarer Books. Rebecca joins us today. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'll just start by saying that there were moments of this book where it feels like being in someone else's brain and in your brain, like the way that you write is this wonderful mix of deep and thoughtful and sometimes maybe even wildly honest thoughts, that kind of jumble conveyor belt of thoughts that happens for us. And I don't think I'd ever quite experienced that in a book. It feels like art, but it also feels like crazy daily life, especially the parts about motherhood. Did you feel it came out that way, or was this a product of your shaping and editing for the final manuscript, or maybe a mix?
Oh, I love that description. It feels really right on. Yeah, it's interesting because if you would have asked me a decade ago, I mean, I wanted to work on this project with my mom's writing and my own writing and our story. But never, ever did I think that I was a poet or that I would write a memoir in verse. And so when I first sat down to write it, this was, you know, way before there was an agent or an editor or anything. When I sat down to start to work on the project, it started to come through in poem. And that was surprising to me. And I had to kind of trick myself. I had to say, like, oh, you're not writing poems, you're writing an outline. You're just doing an outline, a very sparse outline. But as the book, the manuscript started to take form, it really wanted to stay in poetry. And so I honored that. I mean, and I love that you said that it feels like art, because in a lot of ways it felt like that to me too, that this was this creative process and it wanted to come through the way it wanted to come through, even though maybe it would have been smarter for me to sort of write a more traditional memoir, but this is really how the piece wanted to come.
I love that you say that, because I'm a firm believer too that the creative products that we are lucky enough to steward into the world kind of have their own identity, their own agenda, and maybe we're just the lucky folks who get to bring them on in. And that's not always a comfortable experience. In fact, many times it's not, but honoring that is a huge part of honoring creativity and honoring your readers and your experience and your mom's experience.
Yeah, that was very true for me in this process. And that was a big sort of learning moment as a creative, that things come how they come. And our job as creatives is to honor that. And to bring them through, like you said, even when it is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you say that you didn't necessarily consider yourself a poet going in, that you had to trick yourself into thinking it. Now that the book exists, has that changed how you think of yourself as a writer?
Oh, that's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, because I've been in that material for so long, I mean, it's been over a decade now. I mean, like you said, like there's all this craft that comes into it. There's all that with the agent and the editor, all of sort of that outside craft that then starts to shape the story and the narrative and how a narrative is told. And so I've learned those skills. And so I do feel more comfortable. And in that sort of decade plus long journey, I've written other poems. I've had other poems published in different publications. So I feel slightly more comfortable saying that I'm a poet, but, you know, I think that's also a lifelong journey as well, too.
Well, You've spent a lot of your career writing other people's stories, being a journalist for publications such as Time, the LA Times, Townlift. What was different, harder or easier, or just different about being the subject instead of the reporter?
You know, I think it's that vulnerability piece that when I've started to share stories in different publications and also with Paper House that are my own personal stories, I remember like the first few personal essays that were ever published in Time. You know, I kind of felt like all of a sudden I was naked and I wanted to kind of hide in my bed under the covers. And again, I think that that's a muscle that the more we practice it, the better it, you know, the stronger we become in that. But yeah, I think that piece of vulnerability and showing yourself more fully, you know, not behind masks, really hidden, and Paper House especially, you know, I'm sharing really personal things about becoming a mom and my own mother and my own upbringing, that with addiction, growing up in addiction, you're really sort of conditioned to keep those things private. That those things are private. You shouldn't talk about those things. You should protect people.
You're only
And
as sick as your secrets.
yeah, exactly. And so there was a lot of sort of nervous system awakening as I shared that story. But I think it's also really important. I really do believe that deep connection and authentic relationships come when we are able to really share who we are.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that all art comes to us for its healing, so that in some way there's some part of us that wants to be more joyful, wants to process something, wants to understand something, ourselves, a situation. And definitely you feel that as this book unfolds. And when you were talking about addiction, there was a line in one of the poems that's about you getting cigarettes for your mom, and the guys at the store saying, you know, you're not old enough to get these, kind of joking with you. And you said, you remark to yourself that I'm a kid, but I'm not. And children of addicts often find themselves acting in kind of parental or early grown-up ways. Did revisiting your childhood this way make you see it differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a really big thing about the journey of writing this book or, you know, sharing the story, because it was the catalyst for it was becoming a mom. I think because becoming a mom is such a physical, you know, somatic experience, and that sort of shook out in my nervous system and in my body all of these sort of old memories. And becoming a mom and looking back on myself as a child, but then also because I was able to have my mom's writing and see what she struggled with as a child, it gave me just a whole new perspective on her and her struggles and what probably fueled her addiction, and then her capacity to be a mom, and then my opportunity to be a mom moving forward. So, yes, it absolutely impacted being a mom.
I bet. I bet. Well, lines almost blur at times when you're reading this between the observer and the observed, and your own experience of being a mother, and what you're kind of recounting of her experience and recounting of your own experiences, which is an incredible conceit. Did you feel any kind of blurring of your own self as you delved so deeply into her experience?
Gosh, that's also a really great question. I just felt like I saw her in a way that I probably could have never seen her if she were alive. Again, going back to like the masks that we sort of wear and protect ourselves. And I think that she had to protect herself from a really young age and did what she did with the tools that she had. And so, yeah, I feel like I was able to see her and have compassion for her in a way that might be difficult if she were still alive, if she were alive and still using drugs, if I was still having to like negotiate and navigate that. And then, not to sound too woo-woo, but I do feel in my heart that the journey that I went on with her writing and what I was able to discover in her writing about what she went through as a child, and then to sort of bring light to that in a way that she couldn't when she was alive, wherever she is. I do think that that was healing and freeing for her too.
Well, you even in your intro, a couple of the introductory quotes are one's from Buddha, one's from Thich Nhat Hanh. And I know that you were a co-founder of Mindful.Summit County. How has your personal spirituality or mindfulness affected your approach to this project?
Yeah, I mean, for me, and one of the reasons that the book I think came out the way that it came out is because I think sometimes when we talk about like something like mindfulness, we can come at it from a really intellectual vantage point, right? Like Zen Buddhism and Buddhism can be a really intellectual endeavor, and there's like whole histories and vocabularies that we can sort of intellectually grasp onto. And that can be our whole lives just living on that level of a practice. But my experience with becoming a mom and my mom's poetry was so visceral. It was such a somatic, visceral experience that it taught me, like it deeply taught me, it trained me sort of on the ground of that practice of when raw emotions, raw memories, raw mental patterns, patterns that have been maybe not only in our own lives, but intergenerational patterns that get passed down come alive in us, and how they affect how we see the world and move in the world. And so it felt like a training ground. For a mindfulness practice in a way that I never wanted. I would have loved to stay in the intellectual realm, but becoming a mom pushed me very quickly and deeply into that somatic realm.
Yeah, becoming a mom pushes you into a lot of new realms.
it
Both great and incredibly challenging.
does. Exactly.
Well, for 7 years, you had this box of journals and poems and letters, and maybe out of fear or unresolved anger, you decided that you weren't ready to open it. But something changed the day you finally decided to. Could you walk us through what happened and what kind of shifted in you to want to finally open this up and process it?
Yeah, I mean, when my mom passed away, my stepfather was very like his way of healing is he wanted to like clear out the house and move ahead, you know, really quickly. And so very shortly after her funeral, I went down to what she called her writer's nook. It was like in the back of this basement and just really like a little teeny nook by a window where she had a desk and a file cabinet. And I had a Washington Apples box, and I just filled it with all of her journals and all of her writing and, you know, anything like that I could find. And that's all I took. But I had a lot of anger towards my mom, because of her addiction, what unfolded, and then her ultimate death because of her addiction. And so I was so angry, that I just kept the box tucked in my closet and thought, like, someday it would be interesting to maybe go through this and see what's there, you know? But I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And then when I became a mom, I was just desperate for my mom. I was desperate for, like, a mom, an auntie, a grandma to sit with me on the couch, to show me how to nurse, to show me how to change a diaper, to show me how to swaddle, to ask questions like, was I a good baby? Was I colicky? How did you help me? And so I think in that desperation for her voice, that's what took me to the box in the middle of the night.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, the more we're separated across the country, across the world, we don't have those support systems that, as challenging as even those are at times for new moms, but we do re rely on them.
Yeah,
And I
absolutely.
can understand that. That must have been really, here you are with your baby, and you're like, and now this.
Exactly. And also, I think the other part of that was like, again, having my first daughter, that sort of physical act of giving birth released so much in my body. And so it was there already where I was sort of discombobulated and didn't expect that to be a part of becoming a mother. And so I think I also went to her box to help me sort of navigate what had been awakened inside of me.
The project, it says it took more than 10 years to create. What did the book look like in your imagination in year one versus what it eventually became?
I mean, I think being sort of switching over to like my research mind, my journalist mind, like it would be, I want to say in quotes, normal memoir, right? Where there's like paragraphs and research and, you know, there'd be chapters on what addiction does to families, et cetera. But it just didn't want to come that way. And then when I found an agent who saw the vision too, that really helped me. And then it went through rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds of edits.
You got to give birth again.
Again and again and again and again. Yes. But I feel like that's where sort of the story and the shaping and some of more of the art shaping comes in, which is also just a big part of that process. But yeah, it's again, it was surprising to me that it came as poems.
What do you think that you're able to, or that one is able to express through poems that is more difficult to express in prose?
Yeah, I think it's the emotionality. You know, like you said at the beginning, like there was sort of a rawness, maybe an inappropriateness. I think that that's sort of at the heart of it is that there are things as women, as parents, as people that know addicts, love addicts, that we're not supposed to talk to or talk about in polite conversation. And I don't think that does anybody any good. And so I think poetry, it's like that live wire. It can kind of touch the emotionality of those experiences in a way that a well-researched and structured memoir can't really get to.
Sometimes I feel like there is more space between the ideas in poetry that allows you, as the reader, to insert your own experience and to relate to it a little differently. And I certainly felt that in your book. We have a lot of addiction in my family, and so there were parts that resonated quite deeply with me. What do you hope your own kids eventually take from the book? Not just about their grandmother, but about how your family metabolizes hard things.
Yeah, oh, that's such a great question too. I mean, I think of like my daughter. I think becoming a mom was so shocking to me. I had like this sort of whole other story that I was given about what that would look like, and it was so different than that. And so I hope if, you know, if my daughter or my son ever decide to become a parent, that there's some honesty there that will support them in their journey. And then also the same, like I hope the honesty about our family is healing for them. It's insightful, it cultivates clarity instead of confusion. I think when you grow up in a home with addiction, confusion and chaos is just at the center, and you're always kind of questioning your own feelings. You're questioning, am I seeing this correctly? And so, you know, you mentioned the space around poetry on the page, even. Like, I hope that there's clarity for my kids in our family story that allows them just more freedom. Yeah.
You've said that grief that you didn't know you were carrying surfaced only after you had your first child. Did you find yourself moving through the stages of grief again in some way or in a different way, moving through these?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever thought about it like in regards to the stages of grief, even though I think that can be super helpful. Yes, I think that there were just levels and levels and levels of grief that, you know, I mentioned at the beginning that my anger kept me from the box. And I think that that's a protective strategy as humans that we cultivate, that like I'm just going to be really angry, and that keeps me safe in a way. It gives me ground to stand on, you know. And when we start to move past the anger, and then it seems like there's this endless well of grief, there's no ground to stand on. The precipice, the abyss can seem really large and never ending. But I do know for certain that when we move through that, there's freedom on the other side.
Wayfarer Books, your publisher, describes its mission as illuminating darkness and demanding accountability from power. Did you find them? Did they find you? Did that mission influence anything about the book for you as it was coming together?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk for hours even just about like the journey to publication. I mean, that's such a
Oh,
journey
yes.
in and of itself, and different publishing houses that are interested, and navigating the meetings that go on to move a book up to actually getting acquired, and whether it's a good fit, and was a long journey and process. And so Wayfarer Books, I felt it felt like it, I mean, sort of that idea of Wayfair, even just it was like this light out in that journey of trying to find a home for Paper House, that who Wayfair is as a publishing house, I really stand behind their mission and the books and the poets and the authors that they publish. And so it felt like a gift. I, reached out to them with the manuscript at one point, and oh my gosh, probably months, maybe a year passed. And that's really normal. I have a friend that says the publishing world moves at glacial speeds.
So
It's
true.
so true, which is a practice in and of itself. And so, yeah, I mean, just on an afternoon when you're least expecting it, you get that email, and they have been a great fit for Paper House.
Oh, that's wonderful. So the book has been out for almost a year, is that right?
Yeah, 1 year, just a couple weeks ago.
How, now that it's out in the world as its own entity, as its own thing, what are your thoughts about it compared to how you felt when it was just being released?
Yeah, I mean, so wild. So both of my kiddos are at home. My oldest has a couple more years at the high school, but I imagine it's much like when your kiddo flies the nest and goes to college, that you're like, I love you. I did my best. Best of luck. I'm here if you need me. And so I kind of, people ask me, like, is it hard? And I'm like, no, the hardest part was the decade before. This past year has just been like, go, girl, enjoy yourself. And let's see, I love hearing, I've heard from friends that I haven't heard from in 20 years that will reach out and tell me memories about my mom. I have people that were in the program with my mom for many years who will reach out to me and share their memories and experience. So I love hearing about her journey out in the world, but at this point, she's out there on her own. She's
Yeah,
living her
I
best
love
life.
it. Well, if someone else is hearing this interview and they have a box, whether metaphorical or actual, and they want to process some things and write a memoir, whether in prose or in poetry, what advice might you give them?
Oh, I think do it. Like, there's no matter, I would say, don't focus on the outcome. I remember going to one of my first writers' conferences over a decade ago and sort of had just opened the box, had just sort of had the idea. And there was a man who had just published a memoir in verse, and he was giving a talk. And all of the people in the audience were asking questions, and they were like, how'd you find your agent? How'd you do this? How'd you get, And he just kept stopping them and saying, just write it. Like, the whole, that's all of that is out of your control. Just write it, follow the creative impulse, follow that creative energy. There's so much richness in that process that it's not going to be wasted time. And that You're going to learn so much about yourself and the story that you're telling and the loved ones that are involved in that story that it's absolutely worth embarking on that journey.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, you hear sometimes that people want to be writers, but they don't necessarily want to do the writing.
Which I
So,
still understand now. Yeah.
yes, they do. They do.
Yeah.
Well, today's guest has been Rebecca Brenner, author of Paper House, a memoir in verse tracing grief, addiction's legacy, and motherhood across generations. The book is available through Wayfarer Books and wherever books are sold. Rebecca is also the co-founder and president of Mindful.Summit County, and you can find more of her writing and upcoming events at rebeccabrenner.com. Thank you so much for being here, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.